Welcome back to another episode of SLMA Radio. A rotating series of shows all focusing on the sales lead management industry. This week we welcome Mark Godley. Back with his program, Data Dump Radio. The one show where you can hear top B2B data vendors and buyers discuss the reality of today's data landscape. Brought to you by Lead Genius. Let's bring in our Lead Genius, Mark Godley. Hey, Mark.
Thank you, Paul. Paul's the announcer today for the first episode of 2019 of the Data Dump Show. I'm very excited to have a good friend and luminary in the B2B data space, Rick Holmes. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, Mark. Luminary. That's a new one. I appreciate it.
Well, it was either four syllables or four letters, and I figured four syllables. But
no, I appreciate four syllables even better, right? As I get a little older, I'm growing in titles. Great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Very good. Well, I'm excited to have you on because you run a business that is one of the most well-known businesses that no one knows about. And by that, I mean, you're what I call a wholesaler. Why don't you tell people what EMM stands for and does, and then we'll talk about the role that the wholesale plays.
Sure. EMM is Every Market Media. That's what it stands for. What we do, wholesaler is an interesting word, but yeah, we're a vertical compiler, to use fancier words. What we do is we buy or centralize the buying of email marketing data, and in some cases company data, and we clean it up to sell it. So we're taking raw data from the internet, raw data from feeds, raw data from anywhere we can get it from, and standardizing it and putting it together and putting it into, this word gets tossed around a lot, but kind of a minimum viable state for a marketing services company. So the reason we don't get heard about a lot is because we sell through, not, and I won't drop any names here, but we sell through a lot of the big marketing services companies. So we sell our data to a marketing services firm. So in a B2B case, that company is going to put value added services on top of our data, maybe combine us with a few other data suppliers, and then put our data in their product. Might be a software as a service product, might be a business intelligence product, might be a tool that SDRs use. So Every Market Media has made most of its chops on that business, on supplying a feed of data to companies that are in the marketing services business, and that's what we do.
Right. So people may know the names, and I'm not necessarily saying these are your clients, but people will know the names of some of the names that don't exist anymore, like Jigsaw or Net Prospects. And currently there's the Rain Kings of the world and the Zoom Infos of the world. And those are the brand names that people buy. And a lot of times your data has been an ingredient, not in its complete form, but you are a supplier to those vendors and the like. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, totally fair to say. It's kind of like these businesses don't want to operate an oil refinery, right? They want crude oil not to be crude. They need it as kerosene. They need it as gasoline. They need it in some form other than a plain old web scrape or text characters or whatever. And so we're being included as part of a product when a business doesn't necessarily want to have an air quotes, you know, oil refinery right there in its business. And it needs the data in a closer to ready state than what you'd get with just raw data, I guess, not to use too technical a term there, because raw data means a lot of things. But yeah, pretty fair to say what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And the reason I say you're the most widely known unknown person is everybody knows you.
Yep.
Everybody in the B2B vendor space, if they do business with you or not, that's a different story, but everybody knows Rick Holmes. But the thousands and millions, well, maybe not millions, but tens or hundreds of thousands of users of the B2B data have never heard of it.
Nope.
That's kind of interesting to have that.
It's a crowded space, and you really have to, as we've learned with just our software venture this year, it takes a lot of gas to get in front of big teams of end users and really to serve them well. And we just can't. We just can't serve and have the software endpoints and the data refinement, and it's a lot of the things that it takes to really serve a big team of SDRs or a big consuming team of data users. We don't necessarily serve that niche well, but what we do serve very well is an ongoing, reliable feed of new contacts that you can include in a product. So yeah, it's unusual that we're not known for it, but not unusual, and frankly, I sort of like it this way. So it's what we're good at.
Well, what you just said is kind of interesting, which is you know, one of the differences between you and the brand that might be used by a listener of this podcast is that brand probably has put a ton into sales and marketing. They've got an enormous outbound organization to try to sell their data. They've hired a bunch of engineers to build a fancy, beautiful front-end credentialed experience or API. So there's this massive cost of goods sold expense to be a retail brand. And what you're saying is you'd rather just build data, run lighter on the expense side, and sell to those folks that have taken the additional risk of putting a pretty GUI on it. Yes?
Not just the GUI, but there's the concept of the ideal customer profile being right. I mean, we don't have the resources to talk to the Amazons of the world and say, Amazon, who are you selling to this week and which market and which place and which this and which that, how and where and why and what's the program? It's not just the user interface. I mean, we have a software tool that works really well for people who know what they're doing with data. But you end up in a situation where you just simply can't serve the marketing need, right? And that's where the value comes out, where we serve the marketing need really well right now, which is to say a big marketing services company will come to us, need data in quantity. Hey, I need 700,000 IT executives. I'm looking to map North America. That's what we can focus on and do well. If you come to us and say, well, I need 1,247 of them in Wyoming who work for Cisco and these four companies using Ansira products and this, that, or the other, we don't have the bandwidth to serve that well because we don't have, like you say, we don't have the sales team. We don't have the marketing team. We don't have the tool that has all those things included in it. And so stick where it makes sense for us.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about, I think, another aspect of wholesale versus retail, which I think is kind of interesting, which is the concept of kind of data wrangling or data scrubbing versus this new parlance of data science. And let me tell you my bias, which is a lot of these retail players, so they talk about data science. They talk about they've got these fancy algorithms and, you know, this stuff is AI and real sophisticated stuff. But the dirty little secret of the data space is a lot of that data science and algorithm is really marketing. What's happening behind the scenes is a lot of brute force, almost janitorial work that I call data wrangling. Do you think I'm being overly cynical or...
No, totally not.
Laugh at some of this marketing.
Yeah, I think that AI has got a long way before it's in our space in a meaningful way, sure. And AI and all the other buzzwords get thrown around data science. I mean, when you're talking about weather data, you know, okay, data scientist for sure. When you're talking about B2B data, I don't think that's necessarily the case. There's just not that much of it. If you look at some of the leaders in the space, if you look at Discover.org, for example, they have an editorial research team. That's the kind of stuff that you're seeing that gets the job done. That's the reason we don't participate in the space. That's the reason we're not in the space in a big way. So I totally agree with you. Data wrangling is kind of just, that's what gets it done.
It's interesting. I saw a new term from Discover.org, which I think they stole. I think Greta on my team pointed out that they stole it. The term is human in the loop. Human in
the loop
with a bunch of hyphens. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure that rolls off the tongue very well, but, you know, I think the point is...
It says what they're after, right? It says that human in the loop, it says data wrangling, it says that there's some manual, some elbow grease in there, and data science isn't necessarily... Data science implies clean statistics, and a guy with a PhD and a computer crunching numbers, and I just don't think when you talk about an ideal customer profile and some of the things that data gets used for, at least this kind of data... That data science is really the right way to describe it. It's more like a data art than a data science.
Yeah, good. So let's talk about some data.
Okay.
Most organizations are buying either company data or contact data. Tell me about building those. Which is more valuable? I'm just curious as to how you see the difference between building company data versus contact data.
Well, contact data goes bad faster. So in my opinion, that's what is more expensive to build, but you can't have one without the other. If you don't have a good account target, you don't really have a good contact target. But if you don't have the contacts, you're not going to book the opportunities. So you need both. You absolutely need both. But I think the contacts are harder to keep up with because they go bad faster, because people change jobs more often, because phone numbers change, because people change responsibilities. There's two kinds of data out there. You need the company data. It's the root. It's the sort of root, and the contact data bolts onto it. But one does not do well without the other.
And your company supplies both?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to say we dabble. We have a company product, but it's not nearly as strong as our contact product. But as I mentioned, we wouldn't be able to produce the contact product without the company product. So we do both, but to the extent that other companies, I think, certainly do company data better than we do, or at least to greater depth. We have it, but we base our stuff mostly on web domains as kind of our key indicator that a company is real and exists out there, and if there's a valid website at it and valid web content at it, you know, that's how we say this is a company. There's a ton of other ways to do that, and I think even, frankly, better ways to do that, but it's what we do. It's what gives us our unique identifier that allows us to pull contacts into those companies and sort of do the one per company and the other things we need to do.
And from a contact perspective, you said it goes bad quickly. What's your latest stat on how quickly contact data is going bad these days?
Well, it depends on the industry. That's the biggest. And then the other thing that matters is the job role. Sales jobs go bad a lot faster. Real estate and construction go bad a lot faster. But I would say 2 to 5% is probably fair. At least that's the decay rate on the deliverability of the email.
What time frame?
Oh, per month.
Per month. Let's take a short break to pay some bills. And we'll, on the other side of that commercial, we will get a little bit more granular, talk a little bit more data, and then go big picture. So let's move back in 2 seconds.
All right.
And how do you know your total addressable market? What are the most profitable micro segments of your community? Where are the decision makers at your ideal accounts? Lead Genius can help you answer all those questions and more. They help business-to-business enterprise companies such as Google, eBay, and Square power their go-to-market strategies, and they can do the same for you. Lead Genius has the highest quality contact and account data available anywhere. How? Well, Lead Genius verifies every single data point with a unique combination of real human researchers and machine learning. Quality is assured. Accuracy is 100%, really guaranteed. See for yourself why enterprise marketing and sales leaders trust Lead Genius. Just go to Lead Genius, just like it sounds, L-E-A-D, Genius, to learn more about your total addressable market today.
And welcome back to the second half of the Data Dump podcast with Rick Holmes of Every Market Media. We were talking about company versus contact data before we took the break. Rick, another piece of valuable data at the field level is phone versus email. How do you feel about one versus the other? What are you hearing from your clients as to the relative value of those two companies?
Well, I think I just saw something on a weekly email that I get from something from insidesales.com that said that the average reps having to source some like 600 contacts, make 100 calls a day or 100 activities a day, and they're generating about 35 appointments a month off of that. Back to my 10 years ago numbers when I worked for a company here in Chicago, Acquirent, and I was smiling and dialing all day long, those numbers are about the same. So I venture to say that the value proposition to the company using a phone than an email to make contact with a buyer to sell a product, that hasn't changed much. So what do I think about the value? I think they're really good. I think if you can get 35 appointments a month out of a rep, if you're selling a product that's worth more than 10 grand a year, it's probably the business case has pretty much made itself for you.
Do you focus more on building phone numbers or emails or equal?
Well, the phone numbers are probably the most valuable piece because they're harder to source. I mean, it's cheaper to validate an email than it is to validate a phone number. So as far as what we focus on, you know, we can validate an email right before it goes out the door and it's inexpensive to do, where validating a phone number takes more time, has more nuance. I think we have to focus more on the phones than focus on the emails. But, you know, that's kind of on a direct dial scoring basis. We don't call every number in our database. And I know that, for example, some firms do before they're delivering a sales ready lead. You know, we're calling on a sample basis, a bunch of phone numbers and saying, okay, this group of numbers, we called it and this many out of 100, this many out of 1,000, this many out of 10,000 connected directly to the contact on the record. That's sort of our approach to it. And that's how we can determine, okay, this slice of data has got a 67% chance of connecting you to the contact on the record. That's how we work on phones, if that answers your question. But it's a little bit of a deeper dive to get into all those things. And I think people may lose us on the technical bits if we go much deeper. Maybe not, though.
Okay, well, let me make a controversial prediction, then we'll move on to another topic.
Okay.
and I want your take on. One, I think phone, although it has been valuable for the last number of years, will be completely dead and worthless in 24 months. I think email as well will be dead in 5 years, and it will all be about digital persona. What we call today cookies, I don't think cookies will exist in 5 years, but the digital footprint we have will be what all of us are building and buying from a B2B perspective. So you guys can check back with me in 5 years and either call me an idiot or an oracle, one or the other.
Well, I think it's kind of like direct mail, man. I mean, direct mail had a few years where it was not doing well, and everybody said, oh, direct mail is toast. And then once everybody stopped beating the crap out of the attention span in those channels, it came back. I know that the numbers for the amount of spam calls has gone up to some crazy billions of numbers, and spam calls certainly does not do either of our businesses a good turn, right? But I think it's the attention in those spam calls. That's what I'm saying. They're robo-dials copying your area code, trying to look like you're a real phone number. There's billions of those calls, billions. We all get them every single day, and it's so easy to just set your phone to ignore that stuff. The only point I'm making is at some point, if that attention span, people let up on it, like just like direct mail, I think that's the hedge against your bet that they'll go away.
We'll check in. I think you're being overly optimistic. Speaking of spam, let's talk about or get your opinion on some of the legislation as of late. Scan Spam Act, which said you cannot email folks that you don't have a prior relationship with. GDPR in Europe came out and said even more draconian than that, you can't do outreach of any kind to someone that hasn't opted yet. Are these a threat to the B2B marketer or data provider, or is this just political cover for empty suits?
Political cover, if you ask me. I think it doesn't do anything to stop the nefarious stuff at all, right? It's already illegal to do a phishing attack or these other things, right? So it doesn't do anything to stop illegal stuff. It does minimal things to stop nuisance because it's highly unenforceable, just like the TCPA in the United States is supposed to stop telemarketers from texting you crap that you didn't opt in for. But the fact is people do text you and do call you and do robo-dial you, and there's no enforcement of it. And so really the only harm that's being done is to legitimate commercial interest, where like a marketer is actually target you and deliver you advertising that might be relative to your actual interests, where now the market's left with crappy spam. Really, like anyone who either wants to flaunt the law and isn't worried about flaunting the law because it's unenforceable, or is plain old doing nefarious stuff. So I think that those laws are for that reason. I think that they're designed for the consumer that voted for them. They're not doing what they intended, so they're laws on the books for that. And I don't think they serve a great purpose. But I'd invite someone that's a Canadian listener to tell us if they have seen a reduction in nefarious phishing attacks or commercial nuisance email, because some of the biz dev email that you get when it's unsolicited is actually quite useful to you, but it's, you know, when you're getting it in between so much other junk that it's hard to sort it out.
Yeah. All right, so it sounds like you do not think either of those are a threat. What about LinkedIn? Is LinkedIn a threat? What's your opinion of the high fee lawsuit that they lost, saying that LinkedIn data is public information and that they're now appealing? What's your take on where that's going?
Well, I think LinkedIn data, anything that is on the indexable public web, is in fact public data. That's what I think. I think if you want the benefit of making your business open for business 24/7, then it has to be public data. You can't put something out on a public link that isn't public and say it's not public. So that's what I think about that. But LinkedIn will try to maybe say that that's not public. As far as it being a threat, I think that there are so many other sources of useful business information, directories of all kinds. And I think the biggest thing with LinkedIn to keep an eye on is that they're just not like a consequential business unit to Microsoft. I mean, they're a drop in the bucket to Microsoft. So if you ask me, I think the biggest threat to LinkedIn is that they become stale, and that the business community that uses them, you know, kind of like your prediction of phone and email being gone within the next 5 years. I'm not going to say LinkedIn is gone, but if Microsoft doesn't keep it fresh and interesting in the same way Facebook strives to keep it fresh and interesting every single day, Facebook is its own entire business unit, where LinkedIn is a subunit of a subunit of a subunit for a giant. So I guess I think that LinkedIn is probably not poised to be a massive threat. Plus, for their contact data, like, you can buy it at a reasonable price from a good user interface. If you want LinkedIn data, you just go there and buy it anyway. So anyone that was previously building a business on scraping LinkedIn data, like most of their stuff you can buy. Now, I know the high C stuff you couldn't because it was data markers of job changes and stuff. For more mundane purposes, like sending somebody an email, you could just buy it from them. So why would you go all, you know, this long circuitous route otherwise?
Just to clarify my prediction, then to put you on the spot, what I'm saying is phone and email from a business usage perspective will be obsolete within 5 years. I think we'll all still use email, we'll all still use phone, but I think those will not be what B2B buyers are focusing on in their contact acquisitions. So I went out on a limb, you kind of cut it off, Vic, which is okay, I still love you. What is your prediction for where B2B is going 3 to 5 years out?
Well, I think today's investment is tomorrow's pipeline. I think that 10 years ago when I was smiling and dialing in a sales seat at Acquirent, I'd have thought kind of same view. Because when you're in that seat making 150 calls a day, it appears no one's answering the phone then, right? But you still have your tricks and you still have your crafty ways of getting around the gatekeeper and you still have your ways of getting the CEO on the phone at 6 p.m. at night, right? So where do I think it's going? I think it's in a similar state that it's in today. I think that the crafty SDR with authentic communication continues to book appointments with the right kinds of executives. And I think that in 3 to 5 years, if your firm hasn't made the investments in its pipeline every 8 months, you know, which is what it takes for you to build a fresh new pipeline from ground zero, if you haven't made 3 to 5 investments in your pipeline during those time periods, your company is going to have a lot less pipeline if you're not counting on phone and email to fill some of it. Inbound channels are great, but the best channels need outbound too. The best teams need outbound too. So.
Well, we obviously have a fun topic a couple years down the road besides the growth of your new child. Congratulations, by the way.
Oh, thank you very much. Yep, she's lovely.
We'll have a fun topic to have some beers and dinner over to see the value of phone and email down the road. Rick, if people want to learn more about EMM or have some additional questions for you, what is the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn, of course, just at Rick Holmes. You can look me up. There's not too many Rick Holmeses out there, or you can email me at rick@everymarketmedia.com, and we'll get back to you.
Rick, thanks for starting the new year with the Data Dump podcast and with me, and I look forward to many more conversations in the year to come.
Look forward to it, Mark. Thanks for having me on today.
Thanks, Rick. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to another episode of SLMA Radio and a rotating series of shows, including this one on Data Dump Radio. Brought to you by the Funnel Radio Network for at-work listeners like you.